Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast brought to you by The Athletic about Watford Football Club. And hey, things were good and they're getting better. Yes, the fourth win on the trot for Watford away at Blackburn this evening. 3-2 in the end to the Hornets, and that sort of end to the game. I'm joined by Mike. Good evening, Michael.
Yeah, good evening. That last 5 or 6 minute knot in the stomach never gets any easier to deal with. You know it's coming. You know exactly what it feels like, but I still, how old am I now? 42, 43. I still haven't worked out a way of dealing with it. Oh, we made it though. Well done, Orns.
Yeah. And the Athletic's Watford correspondent, Mr. Adam Leventhal. Adam, were you tense at the end there? Were you kind of a cool dude at the end of a tense game?
It was nervy, wasn't it? It was nervy, but I thought that they actually managed it quite well in the end. And Andre Gray came up with the goods right in the corner, so I was proud of our Dre.
Yeah, well, Mike, do you sort of see this out the four games four wins? It felt like the hardest for me, and for many reasons, particularly the pitch. But it was, I think, the hardest one we've had to grind out.
It's probably the least Watford-like game of the season. Apart from the other game at home to Blackburn, it was a tight affair. 3-2, was it 3-2 against Blackburn at Vicarage Road as well? And I have to say, Blackburn impressed that evening. It was one of the rare sort of entertaining games of the early part of the Watford season. Blackburn looked good in front of goal. They moved the ball around and asked several questions of Watford, and they did the same tonight, despite coming off the back of some pretty bad form and, as you mentioned, John, pretty torrid conditions. The rain was continual, wasn't it, from minute one to minute 94. They moved it around quite nicely, and I thought it was an open game, chances at both ends. Again, we came up against an opposition who looked dangerous on set pieces in particular, but they were more than that. They switched the ball around nicely. They were decent with the ball at their feet. And it was just a much more open game than I think we've been used to watching Watford this season as a whole, I think, hasn't it? So it was in some ways really enjoyable, in other ways more tough to take. So you know me, I'm never happy, am I?
No, and I'm glad. Not, I'm glad you're not my life partner, Michael. Now, the game started off. I think that a lot of misplaced passes. You know, not getting quite the weight right on it. It was raining heavily at the beginning of the game, and it took 25 minutes for Watford to get their first goal. And it couldn't have been that was exactly the goal, Adam, that goalkeeper was going to let in, wasn't it? He wasn't having a good game, and it was João Pedro in. Well, you know, just another. It wasn't slick and stylish like you want him to be.
It was very clever. That's what it was. I think, yeah, Kaminski in goal for Blackburn had been threatening to throw one in for the first sort of 25 minutes and was obviously sort of encouraging the Watford forwards. But then it was, it looked, I suppose, when the ball sort of looped up to a front man and then looped into the back of the net, you sort of think, oh, it was a bit of a messy goal. But that was a very clever finish from João Pedro. I thought that he sort of adapted his body very, very quickly and showed great agility, and it was a finish of a confident striker. What's that? 3-3 now, 9 for the season, and he's looking in really good form. And once again, you know, throwing his weight around, doing tireless work centrally, running to the right, running to the left, you know, rotating with Semmer, rotating with Saar as well. So it was really good to see him score a different looking goal. You know, it wasn't a pullback and a little flick. It was him getting on the edge of the box, making a bit of a run in behind and being clever with it, because he sort of gambled, didn't he? He was the first to react, and he got there was brave to get there ahead of the keeper as well. And it was a really, really clever finish to sort of guide it up and over and bounce and then in. So, yeah, really good for him. And it was the perfect start after. I thought they looked confident at the beginning of the game, and they had that sort of presence around them that they had at Preston as well, where they knew what they wanted to do. They were passing the ball around, but of course they were dealing with an absolute ploughed pitch that was really, really soggy as well. So it was difficult conditions, and I think it's worth sort of almost putting an asterisk
the goal.
Yeah, by that game, you know.
I think it's credit to both sides that it was obviously a terrible conditions, and the pitch obviously wasn't in great nick. But I don't think that was the main talking point from the game for either watchers or indeed a neutral. I wouldn't have said either team struggled more or less because of it, or it ruined it. I thought just to touch on João Pedro's goal there. I think there's a great angle of it, sort of. Behind the goal, if you like, with João Pedro coming on, and you just watch him. He sees, you know, it's a bit of a hit and hope from Cleverley over the top, isn't it? But João Pedro, what he does, he understands the trajectory straight away. He sets himself. He works out what he's going to do, and everything you say there. And you know, on first watch, it looks fairly simple. The keeper makes a Horlicks of it. The defender stands still, assuming it's going to be offside or whatever. And on first watch, he's just sort of dinked it over him. But there was a lot of moving parts that Pedro had to get right. He had to judge the bounce right. He had to make sure that, you know, get ready for that potential collision with the keeper and still get it on target. It was a really, really good goal. And you could see the sort of, it's like that meme where you see all the sort of scientific calculations going and the guy sort of moving around trying to work out what's going on. That's what a confident striker does, doesn't he? They make that split second decision and they can work out the trajectory of the ball, the bounce, where it's going to go, where they're going to put it, how much he needs to put on it. And he did exactly that. And I think it was just reward, because I think you're right, Adam. I think what Watford have failed to do all too often up until this little mini run of really good form is when they've come up against teams who are struggling or come up against teams who are weakened by injury. And tonight at Blackburn, I think they had their two young centre-backs, didn't they? And Watford haven't asked enough questions. They haven't been positive enough in exploiting those weaknesses in the opposition. And I thought they absolutely did do that tonight. Blackburn play more football than Preston, which is the game you mentioned, Adam, which probably allowed Watford to have a little bit more swagger, I felt. They were able to sort of really impose themselves on the game for the initial exchanges. And it was didn't over-egg their dominance to when they went 2-0 up, did they? I think they thoroughly, thoroughly deserved it. And I thought they looked thoroughly impressive in difficult conditions, but using their dominance, using their extra quality against what is, quite frankly, an inferior, certainly defensive opposition. So I was absolutely delighted at 2-0 and then frustrated just before half time.
Yeah, I mean, the second goal from Sarr, you know, again, a different goal from him, but, you know, really. Similar to João Pedro. By the way, I think João Pedro has scored many a goal like that on a very, not a cold night in Blackburn, but a very hot, sunny beach in Brazil, where it's a different sort of skill set you need to have to play that sort of football. It might have been helping him out here. But the goal from Ismaila, he pushed it, he kept driving forward, he stuck his toe in, and it went in the back of the net. And again, that shows, I think, the confidence of him and in these last few weeks, where he is starting to play like we want him to play, with those, you know, running down the wing, getting ahead of the defender, getting the balls in and making things dangerous, and also being in the middle of it all to get a goal when needed. And you say you're very happy at that point, Mike. The goal for the third goal of the game, but the first one for Blackburn, did it come out of nowhere? I mean, it didn't feel like they were. I mean, it was actually the only thing that they really had, I suppose, in some ways, their attack. You know, you said how weak their defence was. They were dangerous up front with the Harvey Elliott and Armstrong.
Yeah, they definitely asked questions, but I don't think they were really making many inroads until that point. And just to finish off the goal, it was a great effort from Pedro to forge that opportunity for Sarr, and the fact that he was gambling to get in, to be there for that, to tuck it in, and it still needed dealing with, didn't it? It was bounced up and he had to sort of wrap his foot around and get it in. So confidence, that goal was a product of, and it's like you say, John, it's a thrill, a genuine thrill to see Sarr starting to flourish at arguably the most important stage of the season. But yeah, we conceded just before half time, and it was two mistakes really, wasn't it? I thought firstly Hughes, but then perhaps, you know, Adam Messina just dallying with it on the edge of the box, and he got dispossessed, and a split second later the ball's in the back of the net. And having been so impressive, having been so dominant, and having looking almost like you've got the game wrapped up at 2-0, because Watford were looking threatening going forward, you get another one and that's it, it's game over. Blackburn are down on their luck, and they're not going to come back from 3-0 down. But yeah, it was just a mistake, and we can't afford those really. You know, these games, we've had two close games in the last two games now, haven't we? We managed to see it out against Derby. We conceded there and let them back into the game, and we almost did the same here really, didn't we? Because we went in at 2-1, and yes, we were ahead, and yes, we felt positive, but it's like, that changes the complexion ever so slightly.
And it changes Blackburn's outlook completely, because they were ready for it when their second half whistle went.
First 10 minutes of the second half, they were a completely different side. And, you know, they we talked about the pitch. They made an absolute mockery of it, I thought. They zipped the ball around, and Watford looked off the pace, I thought. And you can't help but think back to you know, that gifting them a goal, really. Just completely changed the complexion of the game. And you thought, right, we're now in a contest that 10, 15 minutes ago didn't look like happening. Adam, I just wanted to ask you as well. For the first time, it felt like the two centre-backs pairing, ever since Sierra Alta's come into the side, he has sort of been the linchpin of a fairly solid centre-back pairing. And I thought for the first time tonight, the pair of them didn't look quite as solid as previously. Do you think that was down to Blackburn playing well and the way they moved the ball around, or just a bit of tiredness, or what? Or the fact that they've broken up that pairing over the last two or three games, and it's back to those two for the first time in a while?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things that you said there. I you know, you look back at the first game that we played against Blackburn at home, they basically play, you know, three forward players the same as we do up against our defence, and they did that up against a back three in the home game, and they caused problems, and they were doing pretty much the same thing this evening and pulling the centre halves out of position, and they didn't seem to really be sort of tracking some dangerous runs in behind, in particular from Adam Armstrong. But I think, you know, as you mentioned there, I think the chopping and changing, it's been necessary, because you can't just sort of play every centre half into the ground, but it has also been disruptive. So it's trying to sort of weigh up the two things. And I know that a lot of the players, and, you know, Tommy Mooney in particular, has said it in the studio a couple of times, that when you're winning, you always want to play. And that's what you're dealing with as well, because if you ever drop someone, they sort of take a little bit of a confidence hit. Is he doing it to rest me, or is he doing it to give someone an opportunity to then sort of take my place? So I think it can be a bit disruptive. And then also you've got to think that, you know, having Daniel Backman in there as well, everyone's still sort of getting used to, you know, new relationships in terms of communication as well. So, you know, it's no slight on any of the players involved, but it's still a work in progress. And then when you don't have the consistency, I think that does have a big impact. But I think overall, if you look at the performances, there have just been a few sort of shady things happening, and performance levels haven't been quite as high as they should be. Obviously, you know, you had the own goal against Derby today. Obviously, that, you know, the distribution once again from Truce de Kong was questionable right from the start. And I do wonder a little bit whether, you know, something needs to be done in terms of the balance of the ball coming forward. It always seems to be coming through Truce de Kong, and you just sort of think, well, let's rotate this. Let's not put him in that position all the time if he continually seems to be sort of making mistakes, and, you know, overcooking his passes, either, you know, short or in particular long. And then you have to start to think, well, okay, if that's what is going to happen consistently, do you look at someone who's maybe potentially going to be better on the ball, more comfortable bringing the ball forward, the likes of Ben Wilmot? But then do you lose the physicality? So it's so difficult. It's a real balancing act. But, you know, I think the long and short of it is they came through another battle without a defeat, and, you know, importantly, a victory, and they'll learn from that. But what's important is that, you know, the coaching staff are on it in terms of their analysis, because we seem to be getting sort of pulled around far too much into for our set pieces against. And you just think, come on, we really need to be on this. You know, Derby obviously had a very strong corner kick routine, which was very random. And if anyone gets a chance and they didn't see on social media, Ryan Conway, who covers Derby County for The Athletic, he did this amazing sort of pulling apart of how the corner routine that Derby continually used and almost scored a hatful of goals against us, but thankfully didn't. He pulled that apart. It was really good. So do have a look at it. There needs to be more work defensively on our set pieces, and also to get more out of them in terms of our attacking capabilities as well. So there's still obviously room for improvement, but I don't think that we should be putting any real downer on a battling war of a performance.
Yeah, I was just going to ask John, how cross are you at me for managing to get all the negative vibes already? We haven't even got to the third goal yet, and I'm going, well, we're not very good at this, not very good at that. Just to round off the negative, but the sort of slightly more concerning...
Constructive
criticism.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done.
Yeah, definitely. Let's live in that world.
Well done. Thank you for that. I feel better already. Set pieces are a massive concern, I think, for me. The way that I thought they were quite inventive with the way they delivered, some short, some long, some into the box, some changing the angle. I've seen Watford do that a little bit over the last couple of weeks. They've tried a couple of sort of neat things off the training ground. But we seem to really struggle against set pieces, don't we? And What is that issue? Is that, again, you know, because I think if a well executed set piece is going to be hard to defend against, whether you're Paolo Maldini or Lloyd Doyle. You know, it's difficult, isn't it? Yeah. If it's in the right area, the right trajectory, it's very, very difficult to defend. But for the second game in a row, Watford have found it very sort of unsettling, unnerving. And, you know, Backman had to make a save late on at the end, didn't he? There was a lovely ball in from Downing, you know, some flat, some lofted. Why is it that we are struggling against set pieces? Is it we've just come across two sides who are good exponents of it, or is it something that we're not hot enough on?
Well, can I ask about, in terms of when you're at the ground, you two, because we hear some bits when we're watching at home on television. When you're at the ground, in those situations, is there somebody commanding the line? Is it Troosticorn Adam, or is it the goalkeeper? I mean, is there a leader who is, you know, defining and doing it? You know, it seems to be Cleverly a little bit from what I've seen, but you know, who's the vocal one in those situations?
I think in the back line, I think Adam Messina is very loud. Mm-hmm. I think Daniel Backman is very loud as well, and William Troosticorn is obviously, you know, loud as well, tries to organise. But it's almost as if, and look, this isn't a criticism of that back line, because they have been keeping clean sheets of late and they have been sort of battling, and ultimately they did manage to keep them out at the end. And it wasn't really harem scarum at the end. Obviously, it was pretty tense.
You say that now.
It was nervy, but it wasn't sort of, you know, balls being cleared off the line every sort of couple of seconds and you thought, oh, yeah, you know, they can't even get it out of the box. But I think it's almost as if they need to sort of, you know, how we've seen the team as a whole get together in terms of the senior players and sort of galvanise this new collective spirit. It almost seems as if, you know, maybe that department just needs to have a little bit of a staff meeting, just try and sort of iron out the communication a little bit. Because I think they all seem to be very much on the same page, and that was... on the same page in terms of their spirit and their determination and their commitment. There's no sort of bad eggs in that department, I don't think. And I think that sort of has been the case throughout this season. I think if you look back to when Vladimir Ivic was in charge earlier on in the season, that was one of the best functioning areas of the team. And it was almost as if they were being let down a little bit by, you know, the midfield and the attack. So I think that they've got some solid foundations. They've obviously got good people involved. They're strong as well, because they get extra support from, you know, Messina now being back and Kiko being back as well. So I just think it needs just a little bit more organisation, a little bit of extra work. And I'm sure, look, they're professional footballers, and this is a, you know, proper football club. They're going to be working on it. And they'll know that they're looking a bit shaky. So hopefully this is just sort of one of the subplots that they just need to incrementally you know, just get a grip on it a little bit more, just show a little bit more dominance. And maybe it's difficult at this time of the season when you're playing every sort of 3 days. And obviously we had that hectic week last week and I wrote the article on it on The Athletic and all that sort of stuff. It is tough to have that extra time on the training pitch to be practicing these things. But I suppose it's just one thing to sort of keep an eye on. If it continues to become a little bit too shaky, then we know that the work isn't being done, I suppose. But hopefully, and you're right at the beginning there, Mike, you said maybe we've just come up against two really good sides in Blackburn and Derby who've got good deliveries. And that's what it comes down to, because we know at the other end for quite a lot of this season, our deliveries have sort of stunk the place out a little bit. So, you know, it does make a big difference if you can get the right ball into the box, and then it makes it difficult for any defence.
I do have to say as well that you asked, John, who is noisy. Backman's voice carries, I reckon, about three counties. You could probably hear it at Stevenage if they're playing at home. He has got the most booming voice. Get out! He's like a cross between something out of Lord of the Rings and the lead singer of Lamb of God. He is just an extraordinary. You really do hear him. But I don't think Troosty Kong is noisy as well. But yeah, Backman, good Lord, he's got a booming old voice. And a good game for him tonight. And I think, you know, we've been not critical, but like we've got through the rough bits. We've examined the bits where we perhaps weren't quite as good as where we want to be, because I think that's where you have to be, because you're now looking at margins. We've now manoeuvred ourselves into a position where we are looking up the table at the top two instead of you know, wondering if we're going to stay in the playoffs. So, you know, we are now an official, the charge is on, hopefully, for a top two spot. And as we know, having been here before, it's very, very close. It's very, very difficult. And you have to get everything right. There is not much margin for error. So I think it's, for those people listening, saying, oh, blimey, lads, you've been a little bit tough on them after what was a fantastic win, a really, really good win. I think it's right to try and iron out those wrinkles. And now we can sort of relax a little bit and sort of bathe in what was a good performance. Because there were, largely speaking, decent performances all over the pitch. Kiko to the right was superb again. I thought Messina, apart from his sort of slightly iffy, well, it was
very iffy.
Yeah, it was a massive mistake for the goal, was good. And then again, we saw, you know, a masterclass from Will Hughes and Tom Cleverley. Both of those guys, I think, we haven't even got to Ken's goal, but both of those.
King Ken, you were very, he wasn't at one of our Friday night lights the other night. His right left foot really wasn't. You made it a Friday night cripes, Mike. Yeah, Adam, you know, he had a much better game. He was playing, you know, his closest sort of partner up there was Gosling, and they haven't, you know, particularly played that much together. But him getting on the score sheet, and I like the fact is the front three all did get a goal each. There's lovely symmetry to that. So his goal, though, was a charge forward and you know, beautifully placed in the corner from him.
At the beginning of the second half, you'll remember that we were under the pump a little bit, and Semmer had a chance just before that that bounced to him, and it was actually a good save at the near post, and that just changed the dynamic a little bit, and it got Blackburn on the back foot, and they thought, hang on a minute, oh yeah, I remember now, we've got these you know, these three really dangerous forwards up against us for the whole of this second half. So, you know, in the build up to the goal, they were being pushed back, and it was, you know, Dan Gosling, who I think looked a little bit tired towards round about sort of 50, 60 minutes. He looked a little bit leggy, but I think that probably, you know, having not played 90 minutes for quite some time for Bournemouth, the pitch, the rain, you know, the fact that it was sort of end to end and there wasn't really much cohesion in the middle of the park, I think it probably sort of ran him into the ground a little bit, but he did play his part in the goal. And then Semmer's, you know, finish obviously was really, really clever once again, the little step over and then the placed finish. And I think if you look at the striking options that Watford have, if you look at that front three, I think every team that we come up against now, they will be hoping beyond hope that there is some sort of rotation, because I don't think that there's much respite for any of the defenders. And obviously Blackburn have had a lot of injuries and they had a very young central defensive partnership, so they will have been fearful. And it was great to see the front three, you know, all contribute, look dangerous throughout throughout the game. As we're talking about wars, I was watching the game from home. I wasn't actually at the game this evening. I managed to work out a bit of an anagram for the three of them.
Go on, then.
The surnames. I know João Pedro should be all as one because that is one name, but Pedro, Sema, and Sarr is an anagram of armoured spears.
Oh. So, you know,
that is, you know, what they were this evening in the Battle of Blackburn. In that war, the armoured spears came to the fore, and they were absolutely fantastic. And just going back to what you were saying before about Sarr, Mike, I think, you know, one of the huge things about him now is that whenever you see him, I remember earlier on in the season, the sort of the cutaways that you would see of him, he might be shrugging his shoulders, he might be sort of complaining, he might be sort of just looking a little bit out of sorts for whatever reason it was, whether it was about, you know, being in the championship, thinking that he was going to get a move away, just the game situation, it might be things that we don't know about, whatever it was. That has completely changed now. And I was talking about when he threw his gloves off when we were at Preston. You saw today, you know, just the encouragement that you see from him. You know, he's connecting with his teammates. He's saying, sorry about that pass, or, mm-hmm. you know, running back. Actually, in the it's ironic, really, because in the build-up to us conceding the first goal, he'd actually, you know, got back into the middle and made a sort of a charge back to try and help out because it was looking a little bit shaky. And unfortunately, it then led to the goal. But the intentions were good. And I think that's his sort of MO at the moment. All of his intentions are good. He's making the right choices. Not all brilliant. Not all the crosses are great. But, you know, in terms of his impact on the game and his output, he's really stepped it up. What is it now? 4 goals in the last 8 games for him. You know, scoring at Stoke, 2 against Bristol City, scoring tonight as well, and assisting other goals too. So, you know, it's great to have him in the side. And you know, even if it only lasts until May and the end of this season, then, you know, we can be grateful that we've got him in that Watford lineup at the moment. And I think he's bringing out the best in the likes of João Pedro and also Ken Sema as well. And it must be really sort of relentless for those defenders thinking, oh, look, we've got a breather now. It's going over to the left. Oh, no. It's Ken Sema. Oh, no, it's over to the right. It's Sarr. Oh, God. Right, play it through the middle. Oh, here's old clever tricks, João Pedro sort of coming up with a box of them. And you just think, oh, it must be really, really tough. So it's great to see. And rewind back to the beginning of the season and rewind back to what, just only a few weeks ago when we were worried about Deeney and Gray and all this sort of stuff. We're looking dangerous coming forward. And that is the most important thing when you build up that momentum in a promotion push.
All three of them offer something different. And, you know, João Pedro, I think he's been pretty consistent when he's been on the field for Watford. I think he is looking, with each game that passes, he looks more and more extraordinary as a footballer to me. Just everything about him is fantastic. He's a threat in terms of a goal threat. His movement is wonderful. His ball control is sensational. His touch, playing players in, his passes is wonderful. His awareness, and of course he's tough as well. You've got Ken on the left. Great to see him score tonight, because I think what's important is if you're not absolutely having an amazing game, that to chip in with a great goal, that what was a vital time, really good finish at an important time, huge for him. And Sarr is just a different player. You know, I dread to think how many times in the first sort of two-thirds of the season of doing this podcast, we need to find a way to get Sarr into the game. We need a way for him to look happy. He doesn't look like he's enjoying it. And I think a lot of that, I don't think necessarily a switch has gone off, because he's always been good. He's always been rapid. He's just got the confidence in those guys up there with him. And when you play with Pedro through the middle, there is a whole world of opportunities open up. And we mentioned them briefly before. Chalobah wasn't there tonight, but he's come to the fore a little bit in recent performances. But Cleverley and Will Hughes as a pairing are just closing that gap between the defence and up top. And at long last, they feel like a unit. And we've got at one end, the defence has been pretty solid, pretty stout all season. But now at the other end, we've got this sort of whirligig, sort of three sort of buzzing
armoured spears you're looking for.
Armoured spears. That's the podcast title, everybody. We're sorted now.
Hashtag armoured spears. Just enjoying their football and effectively running defences ragged. And what really enthused me about Sarr in particular tonight, he got clattered a couple of times, certainly in the second half, and he stayed down once. But earlier in the season, you see him take any sort of contact and he's down. And he'd stay down and he'd remonstrate with the ref, he'd shrug his shoulders and moan a little bit. But he got, it happened a couple of times tonight, and he just, apart from the one time, he was up and at him. And I thought there were some curious decisions from a refereeing point tonight. But he just looks tougher. He looks more engaged. But more importantly for Watford, he looks like a threat every time he gets the ball now. And it's so exciting to see. And it's kind of like, you know, 3, 4, 5 months of waiting to see it happen. It's finally happening. And it's pretty joyous, really. It's a really exciting time to be a Watford supporter, isn't it?
One other quick thing on Ismaïla Sarr. The last 14 games in the league, he's played the full 90 minutes as well. And you imagine all the tackles he is getting and all the times he has been flawed. You know, it's like Chumbawamba. He gets knocked down, he gets up again, he goes again. And he's actually contributing, you know, more and more. So, yeah, I completely agree. I think he's been fantastic. He's been transformed. And also, I suppose it's almost as if he's in a non-distract zone. He's in a safe zone now where he's not being tempted about big moves to Manchester United or Liverpool or whatever. Just this is proper shop window stuff. Yeah. If you want to leave eventually, fine, but just go and do it. And this is your sort of playground to just show everything that you've got for everyone in the squad. Because then, you know, if things don't go well and you don't get promoted, yeah, you'll get the move with the blessing of the football club, because your price tag will be higher. Everything will be, you know, addressed differently in the summer if there is no promotion at the end of it. We all know that. That's just the way things are going to go. So, you know, go out there, enjoy it, show what you've got, and you might get the move, or you might just take Watford up into the Premier League. And that is a great sort of combination of targets for everyone.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Adam, there you mentioned the number of minutes that Ismaila has been playing, but you did a piece last week about that 7 days, you know, the win against Bristol City and Preston and Derby County, and what Watford sort of how Watford got through it and how they were able to win three games in 7 days. What did you find out in terms of that preparation, or not even preparation? It's more recovery, isn't it? That was the success.
That was a huge part of those three games against Bristol City, Preston and Derby, that because they were playing every 3 days, so they only had 2 days in between. What I learned, which I didn't necessarily know before, is that, you know, the day after a game, or the second day after a game, I should say, is the one where players are almost the most precarious in terms of picking up injuries and things like that. And, you know, so there wasn't much work done on the training pitch at all. There wasn't really an opportunity. A lot of the work that was done in between games, and it'll be very similar now to what's happening, you know, tonight after Blackburn. They'll get back in the early hours of the morning. They'll have a recovery, and then they'll have to travel on Friday. They can't sort of go down to Bournemouth on Saturday morning because they're playing really, really early. So, you know, they won't have any chance to do anything apart from some video analysis briefly, probably of the Blackburn game, and then a little bit of a briefing on the opponents, Bournemouth. So, yeah, it's all about recovery. It's all about injury prevention and, you know, getting back into into the training ground and just trying to protect against the injuries, the sort of the injury hotspots like, you know, calves and groins and hamstrings, and just trying to protect yourself, patch yourself up and go again. And it is an interesting way that they prepared for this game, I suppose, because, you know, after having those three games, there was going to be a little bit of sort of in-game rotation, wasn't there? So they were sort of making quite regular substitutions on 60 minutes. And then Zinka Nagel and Ben Wilmot almost seemed to be like a partnership that were coming on together. But then they had, you know, 4 days before the game against Blackburn. And I was quite interested to see how they were going to prepare for that. And it just seems as if they sort of went, no, all right, we've got a few days off now. We're happy to go again. And they've got that sort of siege mentality approach, which I think is really good. I suppose the only thing that, you know, it can fall down on is if you pick up an injury because you've overworked or you've overloaded, you know, one of your main players. But at the moment, and that's, you know, that is credit to the backroom staff and the support team at the club, the medical staff and all the people that are, you know, the sports science team and all that sort of stuff, that, you know, fingers crossed, at the moment they seem to be getting that recovery done pretty well. And although in some of these games you're seeing, you know, some players' legs go, and that will be for a variety of reasons, if they haven't been playing for a lot like Dan Gosling, or if they are sort of playing full 90 minutes in central areas on the pitch, like Tom Cleverley, for example, then there is going to be some fatigue within games. But, you know, getting the team ready to be able to, you know, go into games, start games strong, that's the main thing, because then you can make changes later on if you need to. So, you know, credit to the backroom team for you know, managing to negotiate a chaotically frantic, relentless season in the Championship.
Because I've got the stats in front of you, I always remember, like, they almost see the teams that are really successful always have like a small number of players they pull on that actually make up the starting 11. And that always fills me with confidence, because you think anyone who's playing regularly is going to be more confident, as we've talked about on the podcast already. Do you think, though, Adam, in terms of the setup at Watford, this is a big advantage we have over our promotion rivals, and that's going to be, you know, because of the number of games all the clubs have got in the next few months, this is going to be something that's going to we're going to benefit from over and over again?
Well, the one thing that I sort of looked into when I was doing the piece was sort of trying to look at the history of it a little bit, and I went back to the interview that I did with Filippo Giraldi, and, you know, he reminded me of the fact that back in 2014-15, when, you know, obviously we got promoted, they brought in that cryotherapy chamber, and that was, you know, a precursor to a lot of other clubs doing it. And also, it was the first time that they were flying to games to help with the recovery, and that made a big difference that season. So it's, you know, it's interesting now that they're back in the Championship, and it is having an impact again, because it was mentioned in the interview with Giraldi that it's a bit different in the Premier League, because you don't really need to focus that much on recovery, because often you'll have, you know, a full week in between games. It doesn't really get that relentless, apart from maybe at the beginning of the season a little bit, and maybe there'll be a couple of midweek games here and there. But obviously in the Championship, you've got 8 more fixtures and you're playing every 3 days, as we've mentioned. So being able to have those little advantages like cryotherapy, which obviously uses, you know, very, very cold temperatures to help, you know, speed up recovery and things like that. And also to be able to reduce the travelling time, so you are able to get to sleep quicker after games. So if they can, you know, have that private charter flight back from Bern and be back to bed by 1 a.m. rather than, you know, 2, 3, 4 o'clock when they have to get up at 9 o'clock the next morning and go in and do some recovery work, then it's just those little marginal gains which can help. And some other clubs, you know, will be doing exactly the same thing, but some others who haven't got the big budgets and they're being sort of, you know, they're having their cloth cut quite severely due to sort of having to cut back due to COVID and financial, you know, problems and things like that, that they won't be able to do it. So, you know, Watford at the moment, if they can use those advantages, then, you know, it may be just that little extra 1% that could maybe sort of nudge them over the line into the automatic promotion places. We shall see. But it's, you know, they seem to be doing the right thing at the moment.
If you want to read the article, of course you can, on The Athletic. And to subscribe, you can go to theathletic.com/rookeryend and sign up. The deal at the moment, I think, is 50% off, which is about about £1 a month, or like £1 a week, I think it is, and or 8p a day, and that will only run until.
Are you just making them up?
No, I did a bit of math. I did like my calculator and everything.
You were like one of those shop assistants giving your change when you get all confused. It's like you gave me £5. There's the £4.99. Yeah. There's the 24s. There's your change. Brilliant. Yeah. It's like what?
But yeah, well, you get to read your articles, Adam. But also, they can take part in the quiz that you're doing in a few weeks' time on Monday, the 8th of March.
Yes.
For prostate cancer. There is a special quiz for Athletic subscribers where we hopefully can raise some money for prostate cancer and find out which one of you, all the Watford fans, is the most knowledgeable. To do that, you have to be a subscriber. And if you once you have, if you search for prostate cancer on The Athletic, you'll find the sign-up article where you can take part. That's a couple of weeks away. Is it going to be a tough one, Adam, do you think? Or is it going to be just a little tough? The quiz.
It's going to be testing. I must admit that we need to sort of get those questions together, and we need to work out exactly how testing it is going to be.
Why don't we test them to see if they can come up with an anagram for Zinkenagel?
We'll definitely have an anagrams round. We'll definitely do that. I've already given away one of the answers by sharing it on social media. But there will be ones akin to the armoured spears on March the 8th.
But tomorrow you've got an article, or today when you're listening to this podcast, once you've listened to this podcast, go to The Athletic and read an article you've got about Will Hughes. And it's not just an interview with Will Hughes, it's not just hey, what's he up to at the moment, but it's a classic Athletic to get into the depths of Will Hughes. And you spoke to some very interesting people in his past, haven't you?
Yeah, the piece is called The Evolution of Will Hughes, Watford's Blonde-Haired Silent Assassin. And it was really, really fun putting this article together, because obviously, you know, since he came back into the side, everyone knows, you know, thankfully he's now in his rightful position in the centre rather than sort of faffing around on the flanks. Sisko, stop doing that. So it's great that he's now doing his business in the right place. Sounds like a very obedient an obedient dog or a cat with a cat litter trait. Nothing of the sorts.
Come on, you know, is he a pet or a baby-faced assassin? Come on.
Get on with it. Basically, I wanted to sort of track his evolution from, you know, starting as a footballer, but also how he also evolved positionally. And I went back to speak to his teacher that oversaw his early football career at Repton, where he went to school. It's a very prestigious school in Derbyshire. The likes of Roald Dahl went there. More recently, you know, Olympic swimmer Adam Peaty went there. Jeremy Clarkson went there as well. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. But whatever it is, you know, it's a very, very good school. And I really sort of enjoyed learning about a young Will Hughes. And it seems as if not really much has changed. And that's a real sort of, I suppose that speaks of his consistency and the fact that he has got his feet on the ground, that he was really, really determined back then. His sort of combative nature was seen from a very early age. His first touch was excellent. His ability to sort of open his body and move away from danger and play really, really intricate passes in tight spaces was apparent when he was very, very young indeed. And there's some interesting stories in there. I won't go into all of them. It's, you know, it'd be great if you go and read the piece. But, you know, they came up against Manchester United at Repton because they had a relationship with Manchester United. And there's a few familiar faces that he came up against. And there was one tournament that he played in when he was 15 years old. It was like the Independent Schools Football Association tournament. And he came up against a side from Brentwood School. And they were littered with famous names. Sir Trevor Brooking's nephew was playing for them. I spoke to him, Peter Brooking, who's a lovely chap. And they had Elliot Lee, who's Rob Lee's son. They had Glenn Roeder's son in there. They had Colin Calderwood's son in there in that Brentwood side. And Brentwood won, but that was because the goalkeeper wasn't very good. The best player on the pitch was Will Hughes, and he scored a brilliant goal in that game as well. So we sort of look at that, and then I kick on and, you know, head on through to playing for Derby County. I spoke to Steve McLaren about his time there. We revisit some of the sort of quotes at the time when, you know, he was just coming into the team. And Nigel Clough was a little bit worried about him getting too much attention. But once again, the fact that he was so grounded sort of just meant that he could, you know, make his debut when he was a 16-year-old and stay in that Derby side for, what, 6-7 seasons consistently, bar a few injury absences. And, you know, it was just great to sort of pick through his career and just find out how he's changed from an attacking midfielder. Obviously, now we know that he's more of an anchor, more of a controller in midfield. I spoke to someone who knows Watford midfield very well and also, you know, how to manage players as well, Paolo Vernazza, who's his agent. And he gave a great insight into what he's like on the field, how he works at his game, how he sort of analyses his game, but also what he's like off the field. And, you know, we've seen him with his sort of dry sense of humour and his foul mouth in the Ben Foster videos, but just his sort of witty sense of humour. And that's where the title comes from, being a bit of a silent assassin, because A.D. Boothroyd said that he was very, very quick-witted. Paolo Vernazza said that as well. And, you know, it just comes through in the piece. So I hope people enjoy it. And, yeah, we've done a little bit of statistical analysis in there as well. So it is, as you say, John, a classic sort of Athletic deep dive. And I think it's about someone that people really, you know, really love at the moment, hope that he's going to stick around at Watford for a long time. And potentially he is, you know, he's a future captain. And it would be great if the stars sort of combine and everything goes well, that he can be Watford's captain. You know, no sort of no shame on saying it for, you know, Troy Deeney or Tom Cleverley, who's currently wearing the armband, but, you know, the future. He's still only 25, believe it or not, Will Hughes, and he is potentially the captain of the future.
There's two things I wanted to mention about Will Hughes, and one of them you touched on there, Adam, was just his character. We've talked about how difficult this running is going to be and how it's going to need strong characters and how the margins are going to be the important thing. And you can just see, you know, you mentioned it, not flippantly, but in passing about his character, it's clear in Ben Foster's videos. And you could tell he's a bigger character than you might initially assume. You might assume it to be quite a quiet chap if you didn't know anything about him. But just seeing those videos, you could tell he's not, you know, Watford released a great clip, didn't they, this week of some of the outtakes with him involved in that as well. So for him to be a good sport in that going out is great. And Watford need those people in the dressing room, and I think not just on the pitch, but in training, in the dressing room. I think he could be an absolutely massive player in that regard. And also, just looking back, what a great signing he really was. Because as you mentioned, Adam, and you mentioned in the piece, he played for Derby for a long time. He started very, very young, and he would have been on the lips of a lot of clubs a bigger stature than Watford for a while. And Watford took a punt on him. He's one of those when people sort of hesitated a little bit. I think perhaps there would have been a few injuries. And Watford went in and nabbed him. And what a tremendous signing it really is. Because you could have expected him to go elsewhere, couldn't you? You could have expected him to sign with a, inverted commas, bigger club than Watford.
Yeah, and you know, it was the big clubs that were sniffing around him when he was really, really young as well. You know, the likes of Manchester United and Liverpool, Barcelona as well. They sort of prepared a dossier on him because he was one of the sort of the bright young things, not only because of his flash of blonde hair. And yeah, later on, you know, he admits himself, and I sort of put it in the piece that, you know, he felt that he'd stagnated a little bit at Derby County, and they had a flurry of managers, the likes of Paul Clement. Darren Wassell was in charge briefly, the academy head coach. They had Nigel Pearson, who, you know, ultimately has got us into a situation where he's actually playing in a better position. And he's actually got a little bit of a sort of a future path ahead of him. When he came in, Nigel Pearson, last season, and he dropped him back in alongside Etienne Capoue, allowed Abdoulaye Decore to play in a more advanced role. You know, that actually led to some of the best performances that we've seen from Will Hughes. And now, you know, that is the role that he plays. So, you know, he said that he was sort of ready to leave Derby County. He'd had a bad knee injury as well. And I think that really does take it out of you when he had 9 months out with an ACL. But then he went to the under 21 tournament in 2017, played in a diamond with Nathaniel Chalabar at the base of it. He was playing on the left-hand side of it under A.D. Boothroyd. And then both of those players came back from the tournament. They'd lost on penalties. And then they were both at Watford. And, you know, if things had been different and they'd been allowed or been able to both play, because Hughes had an injury, Shalabar then had an injury in that first season, the plan was for them to sort of play together consistently, and they didn't really get that. And it's only really now that we're seeing them play together and start to build a bit of a rapport. So, you know, I don't know how long that's going to last, and, you know, whether it's something to sort of really cling to for future, but, you know, they're both similar ages and they could be a strong partnership for the next few years for Watford in that midfield. Maybe not just as a two, but as a three. And yeah, you know, Will Hughes, we got him for what, £8 million? That's a snip when you can see what he can do now.
Well, we'll see what he can do, as well as the whole team can do in our next fixture. Early start, ish, lunchtime, away at Boscombe, where we will see how they're doing. They're not in a great place because they are slowly falling down the league. Let's hope Watford don't do the thing of giving them a reason to be cheerful on Saturday afternoon. Thank you very much, Michael.
Not at all. Thank you, Watford. Well done, Lance. Brilliant run of form. Let's keep it going. Yellows.
And thank you, Adam.
Thank you to the Armoured Spears. Good night.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.